Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Richie. Maybe on Walker. Pugh. That'll do it! That will do it! Pugh for Bournemouth. The roof of the Gold Sands is raised.
Hello and welcome to episode 131 of Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast. My name's Sam Davis and I hope you're doing well. After last week's 2-2 draw with Blackpool, it was nice for the Cherries to have an EFL Cup distraction. Call it what you will, the League Cup, the Carabao Cup, but after the full-time results, most people called it the Capitulation Cup. 6-0 we lost. Not the best of performances. It was a horror show at Carrow Road as Norwich progressed to the next round. But the silver lining of the cloud was that they faced Liverpool in the next round. So would we have wanted to get through? No, I don't think so. So back to the league on Saturday. And this weekend, Bournemouth fans had a hell of a journey as they travelled in their numbers up to East Riding of Yorkshire to face the Tigers, where we hoped that we would be able to maul them, that's a Tiger joke, and leave them feeling far from great. That's a Tony the Tiger Frosties joke. This week on the show, I'm joined by Keithy T, who travelled up with us in the car from Milford-on-Sea, a Cherries fan for a long, long time. You've probably seen him on a number of YouTube videos, but it's myself and Keith talking you through events at the MKM Stadium. So this week on the show, I'm delighted to be joined by my travel colleague up to the MKM Stadium, and that's Mr. Keithy T, Keith Thomas from Milford-on-Sea. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. A little bit tired. I think everyone else who went up probably be feeling the same as me. So, but great journey up and a great journey back, and it was brilliant to see everyone there and had a really good day despite the results.
Yeah, despite the result, because I think when you look at certain games, and I always hate to be that stereotypical sort of putting teams in brackets, but you're looking at the teams that are promoted from League One and you're thinking, OK, let's get 3 points against these guys. So Blackpool at home should have got 3 points, and Hull away, a point's not bad, but we should have got three. And in hindsight, looking at what they were like as a footballing side, I felt as though knowing the quality of the personnel that we have got, even with the injuries, we should have had enough. But it just didn't quite work out to be the case, did it?
Yeah, it was a really flat game, actually. I wonder if the midweek result affected these Scott's outlook on the game. He just set up a bit more defensively. I'm sure we'll talk about that in a moment. But it was a flat game. There wasn't many highlights on either side. And I think both sides seemed to be settling for a point there. But well, obviously, we've got the transfer window coming up. And yeah, a bit disappointing. But, you know, we haven't dropped 3 points and we're unbeaten so far. So that's all good.
Yeah, that is all good. And that is what most of the players, I don't know if they were told to put that out, but we seemingly got a conveyor belt of player tweets effectively saying the same thing, unbeaten in five or whatever it is we are now. So, yeah, we are sat on 9 points at the moment in, what is it, sixth position. So we're certainly still in contention, but it just feels a little bit reminiscent of when Jason Tindall had a lot of draws as well. I don't know if you're getting that feeling.
I said that on after the match on the podcast. It felt like last season all over again. Not necessarily the mindset, but the way we set up, we were playing more defensively than we had been previously. Maybe that's to do with the personnel, but it just was a feeling of deja vu again. You know, there was a team there potentially for the taking. We didn't really grab it, and seemed to settle for a point. So, yeah, very similar to Jason's period and parts of Woody's period as well.
So when the teams were announced, Keith, at 2 o'clock, we were there in the new Walton Club, pound to get in, cheap drinks, loads of AFC Bournemouth fans in there. Really good to be meeting up with a load of lads that we've known in person, but also known just for a thumbnail on the computer screen. So it was a chance for you to meet the likes of Ben Youssef and John Spark and Dan Giron and, you know, loads of people like that that you just sort of met online. And there's nothing better than an away day. I don't know why it is. You travel in limited numbers. It's a siege mentality. You have that pride when you're wearing the Bournemouth shirt and the services when you're seeing all the other clubs. Explain how it felt to you yesterday wearing that red and black shirt.
Oh, it was brilliant. So many faces, so many people. And it's kind of strange because you've never met them before, but you feel, oh, I know these guys. And that came across yesterday. I mean, a big shout out for Steve Hensman, who took us up there. He was absolutely brilliant. And Tom was great company as well. But it was great to see Ben, and Jamie Williams was there, and Kirky and his gang were there. And it was a real feeling of togetherness and, you know, really, really good fun. And yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. And it makes a change for me because I'm usually in the home end for away games. So to be amongst proper Bournemouth fans, it's excellent. So thoroughly enjoyed it. And the weather was spot on as well. So yeah. I can't complain about that. Yeah, really, really good fun. Do it again.
They say it's grim up north, but it certainly wasn't yesterday. And Hull, we didn't see much of the city centre because we were on the other side of the stadium. But by all accounts, it is a very lovely city, and it didn't win a City of Culture Award in 2017 for nothing. I'm absolutely certain. So when the teams were announced, we've got it on screen for those watching on YouTube right now. By the way, to all that are and are leaving comments, it's great to see you on board. Thank you very much for your support and leaving your comments. Let us know what you thought about the game yesterday. We would love to know. Plus, at the end of this show, we've also got some videos that have been sent in from people who weren't able to go as well. So it'd be really interesting to hear their views. But we had Nyland in goal. And then from right to left, Jack Stacey, Chris Meppham, Lloyd Kelly and Jordan Zamora. In midfield, it's Brooks, Lerma, Pearson, Jaden Anthony. We had Emilio Macondes playing a bit farther forward as well, and also Dom Solanke as well. So it shows a 4-4-2 there. And look, we did actually switch formations a number of times throughout that. So Dom Solanke did start off as the lone striker, but it sort of morphed into a 4-4-2. But the big news for Bournemouth fans, no Billing and no Mark Travers. We'll talk about Steve Cook later, but how did you feel about those two exclusions?
Caught me by surprise, actually. Mm. I mean, Billing's just been called up for Denmark. I don't know if it's COVID, that obviously they've been precautionary about it. But Yeah, I think when the team news was announced, it was a little bit of consternation amongst all of us, like what's happening to Phil, what's happening to Travis. So it was an opportunity to see, obviously, Jeff back in, but
yes.
Phil, you know, he's such a key player now. And after the radio talk at Solent, where he sounds really enthusiastic to stay with us, it was a little bit surprising not to see him there. But obviously, if he is ill and if Mark's ill, I hope they get well soon and get back there in the red and black for us.
Yeah, he and Mark both travelled up, but they didn't play. So, yeah, it remains to be seen what the issue is there. They say it's illness, but as you just mentioned then, how good was it to see Jeff back? We've seen him training and, he's done his six games now and he's playing for us, which is a good sign, because when players look like they're going to leave, they're usually protected by the club and for the club they're going to sign for, so that the deal all goes through. But he's playing for us, which to me indicates he's staying, which Tom, I'm absolutely certain will be chuffed to bits with. But what about you?
Yeah, definitely. He's such a big character on the pitch.
Huge.
And he works so hard for us. And it sort of gives us that little bit of continuity. You know, I think Gavin has been absolutely brilliant, but you can't but love his experience, his enthusiasm. We like his shithousery as well. So I'm sure we're going to be seeing, hopefully, depending on what happens on Wednesday, hopefully a lot more of that going forward. But it was great to see him back yesterday.
No Steve Cook, though. And this was the one that a lot of fans are very much baffled by. And then Scott Parker's little tidbits afterwards released to the media all through AFCB seemed to indicate that he wasn't really in his plans. It seems like he's going, and there are rumours flying about that within the next 24, 48 hours, we might hear something to confirm that. And I don't know how I feel about this, really, because it's a shame to see his AFC Bournemouth career, if it is to end, peter out like it has done. But yeah, to be excluded from the squad's not a good sign, especially if he hasn't got an injury. They didn't use the Josh King migraine excuse that they could have pulled out. I mean, they've got a whole list of excuses that they could have used, but they didn't. What does that say to you, Keith?
Oh, it would be an end of an era. I mean, he's been our captain. He's been through the journey. I still think he's got a lot to offer us. He's 30 years old. Yes, he looked off the pace on Tuesday night, but, you know, who could forget that Fulham goal? That world-class goal from a centre-back is something to relish. And he's just been a stalwart of the club. And I've got to ask myself, yeah, obviously Cahill's got a great CV, but he's 35 years old. And Cookie is 30. So I don't know what the thinking is behind the move. No doubt, when Cookie releases his memoirs, he'll tell us why. But I think he's just as despondent as the rest of us. You know, we've only got Stanislas and Smithy. And I think he would have given us so much experience. I mean, last season he was a rock for us. But I don't know. I know it's a new era, but Gary is only here for a year. It's not like we're bringing in someone to take us forward. It is literally a stopgap. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I don't know at all.
It seems, you know, Parker wants to build a project, but, you know, you're bringing in someone that's only got a year contract because he is so old for a footballer, 35 years old, in Gary Cahill. But Steve Cook, he can still do it. Like, so, it, you know, it looks like he will be off, and it's yet to be confirmed where, of course, with the structure of the club as it is, it's not necessarily Scott Parker's decision. And there are some decisions being made from above his head, and whether he agrees with it or not is, you know, almost irregardless. It may not really matter what he thinks, when certain people might not want Cookie there. For one reason or another, Steve Cook's probably going to be on a high wage. So maybe that's one of the reasons why we have to get a shot of him. I don't know, but you know, either which way, at least on Back of the Net, I'm sure I would hope the club would do something, but on Back of the Net, we will certainly do a video out for Cookie, because he is a legend of the club, and he's someone that somehow never had a chant from us, which was actually despicable. But never mind, never mind. Right, MKM Stadium then at Hull. Not a bad little ground. I say little ground. It's a not a bad stadium, is it? It's one where they share it with the rugby, but you know, quite a nice size. But even still, they couldn't fill it.
No, no. That obviously they've got their issues there. They're with the ownership, the Allums, and that's still ongoing. So I don't know if fans are boycotting or just a lack of enthusiasm, even though they've got promoted. But they've had a roller coaster of a ride, similar to Blackpool. And I was chatting to one or two of them on the way in with John Sparks, and yeah, they're not at all happy with the way the ownership is, and it showed on the gate attendance. I mean, we took a small contingent up, but yeah. We at points we were louder than they were, and. Yeah, it's difficult times for a lot of clubs with finances as they are. But yeah, there was one side was filled, but the rest of it was sprinkling of their fans, and yeah, they were quiet throughout the game. So we'll see how they get on going forward.
Certainly, I mean, I know that home fans sometimes are not as loud. I mean, you know, as Bournemouth fans, we know that because I thought our you know, decibel level against Blackpool is pretty poor, and as an away set of fans, Blackpool were absolutely brilliant, and they had that party atmosphere. But you know, through being in the Championship, it didn't have that feeling at Hull necessarily. But maybe they're different away. I'm sure they are. But look, let's get into the meat of and bones of the actual match itself. And Keith, you know, it started off actually fairly frenetically because Lloyd Kelly made a hell of an interception because there was an early chance for the home side as Tom Huddleston found Keane Lewis Potter beyond the back line, and he drilled the ball across the box, and it looked destined to reach Tyler Smith, but for Kelly's outstretched leg, which diverted it away. As it happened, the linesman's flag was up, but it was quite an interesting start to the game, really, because there were these little sprinklings of attack for the home side. And, you know, Bournemouth were guilty of coasting as they were through much of the game.
Definitely. They showed early promise when they attacked. I mean, thankfully, I thought Chris Meppham yesterday, for me, he was man in the match. And yeah. Lloyd Kelly defensively was really good. So They had a few of our chances. There was another one later on where they actually hit the crossbar, but they petered out after a while, and they were targeting, obviously, Zamora. They see him as the inexperienced guy, and for the first 15, he did look shaky, but he settled into the game, and he made some great underlaps as the half went through. But it was a bit of a stalemate, and Huddleston, you know, he's going to play that quarterbacking role and ping out balls and try and release players. But they didn't capitalise on it early doors. But we settled in, and it was attritional battle, really. There was an injury, obviously, in the first half as well that they had. And frenetic, but with no momentum on either side, really.
Yeah, exactly. There weren't these sustained spells of pressure from a side. It was just almost like a sort of, yeah, like a game of basketball, slow game of basketball. It wasn't particularly great. I mean, one thing that I sort of noticed is our left flank seemed to be a bit more productive than our right, and Jordan Zamora was going forward, and sometimes it looks like he's going to sort of lose the ball. He almost runs like Raheem Sterling at times because he looks almost a bit like he's going to get knocked over and a bit unsteady on his feet. But I think that uncertainty sometimes puts off the defenders. They don't really know which way he's going. He went on a number of runs. And how is it, Keith, that the left side with our two basically graduates from the academy in Jaden Anthony and Zamora, I think, by the way, speaking of Anthony, I think he did all right up to a point, and that point was getting into the box because then it went wrong. How is it that that side did better than the seasoned pros of Jack Stacey and David Brooks? Because they did feel like such an imbalance.
It did, and that was apparent throughout the game. Zamora's bundles of energy. Of course, Anthony and Zamora are inexperienced, but they show intent. They show they want to get into the box, get to the bylines, create crossbacks in, you know, for oncoming midfielders, and we'll get on to that a little bit later. But they just boundless enthusiasm about it, and you can forgive them for making little mistakes or getting a little bit caught out of position. But Zamora's pace is exceptional, and I like the underlaps, and I like that there's an attention to actually drive the game forward. And they were at sixes and sevens at some times when Zamora was making, as I say, underlapping runs and playing off Anthony. And this is where we miss Billing, because he feeds off that as well.
That triangle work well together, don't they?
Yeah, and we didn't have that yesterday. It's just so baffling why Stacey, first game back, and you could say rim rusty, but the longer the game went on, Brooksy was getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And for someone we want as an inside forward, you know, we want him to be, you know, taking the attack forward. But again, yesterday, it didn't show. And he's pressing as well. Brooks is pressing. He was off like 2-3 metres off, and he didn't seem to want to get into the fullbacks and triggering them. And obviously, Stacey was playing more of an anchoring role. He made some overlaps, but it's so baffling, because this is a guy with talent. And it just doesn't seem to be consistent enough, Brooksy, he's not being challenged at the moment. But if we brought someone in, you know, I wonder if he'd get his place. So I don't know, Sam. It's really, really strange.
It is. I mean, look, no one's obviously pouncing on Parker just yet. But I thought the way he plays is the high press, because you're forcing the goalkeepers, defenders into making errors, and you can turn them over quite quickly and hopefully take advantage. But it looked like Hull weren't that great at the back, I've got to say. Through the times that they had the ball, they always seemed to want to get rid of it fairly quickly. They didn't seem to be a team that was overly comfortable with playing out from the back, albeit they did, but they did that because we didn't put the pressure on them. Whereas if we did that, I think we'd have had a bit of success, and we saw that through Solanke's chance that we'll obviously go on to in the second half. The goalkeeping blooper that happened, a bit like Nyland the other day against Norwich. He gave it away, but I don't know. It just didn't seem to be the style of football that we all sort of know and grew to love from certain times when we've seen it. The last 20 minutes against Birmingham, I thought was exceptional. The first 45 against Blackpool was very good before we fluffed our lines. And you know what? There is an identity, and it is creeping in. But I don't know. Perhaps I'm just being a bit too impatient, Keith, am I? It can't happen overnight.
Well, I mean, the whole thing that was sold to us is Scott Parker is playing this expansive attacking football, and it showed that he wanted to play with one holding midfielder and get those centre midfielders running off Solanke and getting the best out of Solanke, because you create that tension that Solanke does. When he comes deep, he sucks in defensive midfielders, he sucks in centre-backs, and you create that, particularly in the half space between the full-back and the centre-back, you create that space. And Phil and Emilio yesterday both like exploiting that, and that means that the centre-backs have to face back to their goal because they're having to scramble, and that never happened yesterday. It was more like Woody's, like 4-2-3-1 at points, that we were battling in the midfield, but we weren't dominating and pressing forward. And the press and the off of the ball work was completely different from what we've seen. We seemed to be set, apart from Dom, nobody else was really pressing high. So you can't ask Dom to do everything for us, you know, to press, to make runs and everything like that. He needs support. And I didn't see it yesterday, and that was really frustrating.
Yeah, it was. Now, for those watching on YouTube, you'll see Dom Solanke heading the ball towards goal. And that happened on around 17 minutes, because just before that, Lewis Potter curled a shot wide for the Tigers, but it wasn't really any threat. And as the game wore on, I felt like Hull's chances that, you know, they weren't overly clear cut, apart from one that we'll talk about in the second half and Keith briefly mentioned. But there was a cross that came in from Marcondes, and Solanke rose highest at the near post and he forced a good save from the keeper. But the ball ricocheted back off Solanke and went over, and it was a goal kick to Hull. But, you know, a really clear chance for us. And it was nice to see us manufacture a chance, because up until that point, Keith, lots of possession, but doing absolutely nothing with it.
It was a lot of crab ball, wasn't it? It was going side to side, and there wasn't any purpose in the passing. I mean, possession football is all about creating tension, as I was saying a little bit earlier, that you're dragging in defensive players out of position, you're creating space, you're attacking the space as well. Mm. And that was, we were devoid of that until that point. And Marcondes was quiet yesterday, but he kept on in both the first and second halves, exploiting the space. But nobody was picking him up from our side to play him in. But when he did get in, and I think there was also another chance he put a ball across the box
as
well.
Yes, he did, yeah.
And you're just thinking, that's just crying out for a Billing or a Solanke, you know, because the centre backs are coming and having to face their own goals, and creates all sort of chaos, or Anthony to drift into the box. Either one of those three, with the quality of that ball, you could make something out of it, get a corner or get a shot on target or something. But it was few and far between. It was like knocking it about at the back, and they play it into Solanke, but he's got two or three on him and he has to pass it back and then knock it about again. I mean, Solanke was working ever so hard, but he wasn't getting any help to go forward, and apart from Anthony. But as I say, Brooks was getting deeper and deeper and deeper, and yeah, it was really frustrating yesterday.
Yeah, it really was. And sometimes you just want that instinctive striker to gamble, and when those balls were hit across the box, Marcondes, he got the other side of his marker and flashed it across there, and just someone just throw their body at it, just someone, and you know, that's where certain players like Phil Bill, they sort of attack late, and or just an instinctive striker that will be in the right place. I don't quite think Solanke is quite there, whether he ever will be, we're not too sure. It was really good though to see Jefferson Lerma out there on the pitch though, and he was pulling the strings. Ben Pearson less so much. I didn't think it was one of his better games, for us to be fair.
No. It was, both of those players are very defensive minded. They want to win the ball and then play someone off. You know, they make a pass out rather than driving and running on. And although Lerma was the more advanced of the two, they both seemed to be content with just winning the ball and then trying to lay it off to a number of passes that were going out to the sidelines, just trying to lay it off and get other people involved, where we really wanted drive and energy in there. So they're quite similar in that way. But Pearson, we know he can pass little dinks over the top for Solanke to run onto, or Marcondes to run onto, or Anthony to run off to, or even if he had been advanced, you know, something that Brooksy can latch onto. But there was none of that. It was all very short passing all the first half and most of the second half. There wasn't the variation of passing that, again, we've seen before, you know, pinging it out wide from Lloyd Kelly, or little dinks over to get behind the line. So there was very little that Solanke could do. All he could do was just suck in defenders and try and create the space for creativity. But the only creativity was Marcondes, and nobody picked him up. So that was really, really baffling, I thought.
Yeah, and so just before the first half ended, Hull had a great chance, and Jordan Zamora with a last gasp challenge managed to get his foot in there. I think it started off on their left flank. The ball came across, and to all intents and purposes, I think most people in the stadium probably thought it was going to end up in the back of the net. But he's done a few of them now, and he's proven to be quite a find on that left side. And from what I've seen of Leif Davis so far, I'm not overly convinced by him yet. You know, Jordan Zamora is it's his place to lose at the moment, isn't it?
Yes, and I think it's an improvement on what we had last season. I mean, I didn't mind Rico. I thought he's a great lad, great attitude, but sometimes the quality wasn't there. But for a youngster, Jay-Z has been exceptional, and he's shown maturity in his game. First game, you could argue he was out of position, but because he's got pace, because he's working hard for the team, he seems to be making those tackles, and he's getting a great all-round game. He's great going forward, almost like a winger. But he can also get back and makes those last-ditch tackles, and they're game-saving. So he is really set out of his stall, and he's also shown a little bit of leadership out there. He's showing intention that he wants to attack. He wants to get out of at the opposition team. But others are just a little bit... we've been disjointed in our selections, so there's a little bit of excuse for that. But he's showing up. A lot of players that are, you know, who are rated highly, he's showing them up. And I think he's brilliant. And I think he's different from what we usually have. He's not, perhaps, delivery isn't as great, but his energy and his enthusiasm for the game and his development has been brilliant.
Yeah, it really has. So halftime it was, and there was an interesting stat that I saw come through on one of the forums that said before the game, AFC Bournemouth were actually rock bottom in the chances created table. We've only managed 32 shots so far. To put that into context, Coventry have had 60 and Birmingham have had 68, but our saving grace has been our finishing, where we're standing at the top of the conversion table, 25% of our shots finding the back of the net, which is miles clear of anyone else. And, you know, you're sort of looking at the stats at half time and you're noticing like AFC Bournemouth have had more shots, have had more chances, have had more possession, but it didn't feel like that, Keith. It just didn't feel like it.
No, as I say, it felt very similar to last season. As I say, quite a conservative way from where I was sitting, quite a conservative way of playing. As I say, Jeff has played that advance role, but he's a ball winger by nature. That's his game. He's not really renowned for attacking half spaces. And it showed yesterday, they seemed to just completely miss out Emilio, who was drifted into space. And we didn't seem to want to dominate the game. This was crying out for me for Kilkenny to be in the team, but to give that bit of creativity, that give that bit of drive, those little turns that he does off an opposition and drive forward and bring energy into the midfield. But it was more like, as I say, some of Woodgate, when he set it up quite conservatively. And I wonder if Scott has set it up not to lose the game because he may have seen something in the midweek that concerned him. But there was no reason to fear this team. I mean, Huddleston's obviously a good player and Livermore is a decent player, but this is not a team that is going to set the world on fire. And personally, I thought they were there for the taking. But the chances created, it's a strange stat because 4-3-3 is all about chances, creating chances and creating shots on target. And it seems to be we're getting a little bit more conservative and more pragmatic, which is not something I'm not particularly a fan of. I like to go and win a game rather than prevent losing it. But it seemed that way yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. So there were a couple of chances for both sides within a space of about 4 minutes in the second half. And the first one was where Marcondes again was in a really good position. We won a throw-in inside the Hull half and quickly threw it to Emiliano. And he was shepherded wide, but he managed to get this cross in, and again, just missed everyone. And just someone throw their body at it, but you know, no one did. And then huge, huge chance for Hull, where Doherty, they were inches, centimetres, millimetres away from taking the lead. He found acres of space in the box from Coyle's cross, and his header was sent crashing against the crossbar. And then, less than 60 seconds after that, Solanke had that chance that the goalkeeper for them, Ingram, it was a poor pass, and it was an instant snapshot. He had more time than he thought, saved by the Hull goalkeeper. Huge moments in that game, eh?
Absolutely. It was a bit frantic at that point. Yeah. You thought, oh, my words, where's this going to go? I mean, in fairness to Solanke, he had been pressing all game, and he's been dropping deep, going up and down, trying to make something happen. And I think it surprised him a little bit that it came on to him so quickly.
Yeah.
But it shows you the benefit of good pressing. You could create mistakes in their back line, in their midfield, that we could capitalise on. We weren't doing that yesterday. So it was quite something to see. I mean, the goalkeeper was really there for the taking. He had made mistakes. He kicked the ball out. Out of play as well, and he looked nervous, and you know, Dom was trying to force things to happen, but the cross from Mokondesh, no one capitalised on it, again, because Dom's been deep, he's coming in a little bit too late, but there's again missing Billing to ghost in there and just put it away, or and a little bit of lack of experience from Anthony yesterday. You know, to read that pass or read that intention of passing, it clearly showed. But defensively, yes, they had an effort. And again, it's a big ball in wide and trying to capitalise on our lack of height. I mean, Meps and Kelly are not small, but we're not the tallest team. And so they obviously had a game plan second half, but again it petered all out, and it was a little bit jaded. I thought at the towards the end from both sides they looked tired.
Yeah, I thought that as well, because it was almost like the Cherries fans didn't believe that we were going to score as well, because we had a number of corners, and yeah, you know, there was all the Boscombe back of the net, but there was one where Solanke put it wide, and it was actually quite a big chance, but you know, there wasn't that kind of head in hands reaction from the Cherries fans. It was almost despondency, because we were just so poor and was, you know, so not clinical. But yeah, that Solanke chance, some people are saying that he had more time than, but when you're in that situation, you just hit it hard low. Quite often it goes through the keeper's legs. I'm not really sure what he was trying, but you know, for someone that in the previous match maybe overthought it by taking too many touches against the Blackpool keeper that was coming to meet him, this time he hit it first time, and you know, he's not going to get it perfect every time, so maybe he had that in the back of his mind in that split second that he had, and just thought, you know, I need to leather this because there could be a defender right on my arse. As it was, he did have a bit of time, and his body wasn't set in the perfect position for it, but he got the shot on target, and it was a shame. But yeah, before that, it was one of the only times that sort of Kelly and Meppham had been caught flat footed a little bit, but it was a good header. But weirdly, Nyland had it covered, I think. I don't know. It's easy to say, but when that header came in, I wasn't worried, which is a bit of a weird one. But like you say, it did peter out throughout the game, I've got to say. And one of the things that I just got, really frustrated by was just we had a purple patch, but then we started to like sit back a little bit, and then we commit these stupid fouls in Hull's final third. So Pearson did it once. I think someone else did it. And you know what? We're awful at, you know, we're not great at defending set pieces. We're not too great at them. So why are we so ill-disciplined at times when, you know, squeaky bum time like in matches? It's not great.
No, I don't know if it's frustration that the guys know they're not playing to their potential. But there's a number of things that are happening. I want to come back to Brooks again. He had a chance, I think, in the second half as well. He was clear he could go down the line, and you expect him to, again, play a ball across and try and create things. If Dom's living off scraps, he's not going to put them away. I don't know any, even the top class strikers, they get the chances, but you have to create the chances. He goes down the line, then he stops, and then he goes, oh, I'm going to go inside again. And he's thinking, look, come on, you know, just create something. And the other thing I noticed yesterday is how rigid they were. As I say, this is meant to be expansive, attractive football. I didn't see the inside forwards swapping over, so they become wingers to put balls in the box. I didn't see any rotations in the middle of the park, you know, to take some pressure off Marcondes, switch it around a little bit, cause them to think. And, you know, Marcondes could swap over for Solanke and get some movement there and off balance them. We were so easy to read yesterday. And as I say, this 4-3-3 that Scott is advocating is all about destabilising defences, causing that tension, creating spaces, triangles. That wasn't apparent to me yesterday. And consequently, I don't think it's complacency. It's like a frustration. So he's got the international break coming up. He needs to work on that. But all the good work seemed to be undone yesterday. I know we had a shocking result midweek, but that was a scratch team. This is meant to be the final 11 we're looking at. It didn't look like it to me.
No. Set pieces also. I thought our corners were really bad. You know, contrast that with the against Birmingham City, where Ebson Rossi was going up to Junior Stanislas and basically directing him where he wants it, whereas quite often we couldn't get it over the first man. So that was another cause of concern. And Hull, I think they looked as though they were happy to get the draw the further the game went on. But they did look dangerous when we were giving away those needless fouls I just mentioned. They looked very organised, and they were kind of side that, you know, they were inviting us to, you attack them, but we needed a bit of invention and we didn't have that. And that's just really frustrating. And as it was, the match petered out and, you know, we've got another draw and frustrating. You know, yes, you can sort of label it as being unbeaten, but for me, I'm looking at certain games this season thinking, you know, you've got to get 3 points there. And yeah, that was one of them for me.
Absolutely. We've got Cardiff coming up. We've got Barnsley. I've no doubt they're not going to change that much. I know it's a new manager, but they seem to be similar types of managers coming in. Cardiff, look, you know, they've got Kiefer Moore in there, and he could cause us a whole load of problems. And then we've got Warburton's QPR, who are playing attacking football and showing tension. And we can't just drift in and out of games. And the ill discipline as well, you know, to give away free kicks in the final third, and you know, they're targeting our set pieces already. We're just gifting it to them, and the lack of intensity, the lack of just basic footballing intelligence. Think about it more rather than playing the same old balls all the time. Again, I don't want to pick him out, but Brooks just seems to know he's one move that I'll come in off the and he was playing quite narrow at times as well, which was baffling. But Stacey wasn't getting the overlaps, maybe a lack of energy, he's coming back of injury. But it just keeps on making the same moves as though, you know, I'm going to get something out of it. Well, the definition of insanity is keep repeating the same thing over and over again. It's not like the opposition don't have VCR and don't look at that and think, how are we going to combat it? Why not discover there's a left-hand side, Brooksy, and actually use your left foot to create something, or come into the 10 position and just look for space? But whether it's been told that by three managers now, or whether he thinks I'm a one-trick pony, remains to be seen. But I don't want to pick him out because he wasn't the worst performer on there, but it was flat and it was lifeless. And we could be into deja vu again. But I hope Scott, you know, and I thought him walking off yesterday, is a tale in itself. You know, not coming over to clapping the fans who come a long way up the country to see, you know, the 300 of us, 400 of us who went to see it and just walk off. And it was for the first time it unsettled me. And I've been quite positive about Parker, but I can't say yesterday was an exemplary from everyone.
Yeah, I'm sure he's frustrated. I'm sure he's this. I mean, I'm sure he may be angry, annoyed at what he saw. I don't quite know. But Bournemouth fans made a 5-hour pilgrimage to get behind the boys. We, you know, we were trying to sing throughout. And to not be clapped, I mean, Eddie Howe, like, we took, you know, he was a brilliant manager, but we sometimes had some awful performances, absolutely awful. You know, we got smashed by teams at, you know, Manchester City in the Premier League before that in the Championship, Huddersfield, Watford, you know, like, actually, like, one of them wasn't a bad performance, but, you know, there were times where we put in some real shockers, but he would always make sure the players come over and he would clap us away himself. Always.
Absolutely, Sam. And I would imagine Jason would have done the same because he's brought up in that culture. You know, he came up through that culture. You think of the great managers of the past. I don't know. Mel Machin, I'm sure he would have made his players clap. I'm sure, you know, Driscoll certainly did. To just walk off, you have to be professional and you have to show the appreciation of fans. And I'm sure he's frustrated with it. But I don't imagine Woody, you know, he says after every podcast or every interview he did, up the cherry, showed enthusiasm, showed he wanted to be at the club. And whatever's going on, you know, Scott's new here. He's got a lot of hard work to win over fans. And ringing in our ears is what Fulham fans have been saying. And he hasn't got media darlings to cover it up with us. He's got to show, hold up a minute, these guys have spent a lot of money coming up here, getting up at the crack of dawn to support the team. And just to slink away is something I would expect from maybe Jimmy Quinn. But I don't expect it from someone who has said, I want to be here. This is the place I want to be. So, you know, he's got to do a lot more to win over the fans than just going off. And Len giving a rather lacklustre post-match interview as well. You know, I don't want him to go or anything like but of course not. Show that you want the job, irrespective of what is happening upstairs or in the board or whatever. Show that you want the job. You've got a lot to prove. And as I say, we've had Fulham fans tell us, you know, it hasn't always been great with them. This is a clean slate for him and his coaching team. Show it. Just show it.
I just wonder who it is now within the club that instills those values. It was always Eddie before. It was always Eddie that used to, you know, tell players and, you know, show them the videos about the ethos of the club and what it means to be a Bournemouth fan. I just wonder who's now responsible for doing that. Scott Parker won't know. So it's got to come above that. I don't know if Jeff Mossin will get involved in it, but, you know, that's not the type of thing a Bournemouth manager does. But I'm sure there could be reasons for it, which obviously we don't quite know. And we finish this sort of like part of the season, as I said, in the playoff positions in sixth place, I think. I think we stay there because West Brom got their late winner at Peterborough. But Keith, first few games of the season, first five games of the season, then what are your overall thoughts?
Mixed bag, mate. Mixed bag. Just remember that, you know, people criticised Jason. I think this time last year, maybe in third or fourth, we're sixth. And I hope there's some improvement. He's got 2 weeks to work on it and for Scotty. And we're trying to get behind him. But he's, you know, but it's so much inconsistency. The promising hope at the start of the season and pre-season has sort of dissipated into this, I've got to play pragmatic football, I've got to get this, whether that comes from upstairs. It's certainly not coming from the fans. They're not, nobody's set out expectations. We all accept it's a long-term project. But there's been a mindset change, certainly this week, that I've got to get points. I've got to get points, rather than say, take your time. Obviously, the window is stressful for every manager, for every club. And obviously, the finances are precarious. But he would have known that before he came in, I would have assumed. And we were talking about the values of the club. Richard Hughes played for us. He's mates with Eddie. He has no excuses or hiding places not to know those manager, those values. And he had the big man. He's still in the coaching squad. And Sean Cooper and Anil Connell, they've all played for us. They all want to know what it's like to wear the red and black. And if you're coming in and you want to impress, get your CV, be the media darling, you've got to show it in your attitude. And the nice suits, I welcome that. But as I say, yesterday overall, it sort of makes you question. As I say, I'm not wanting him out, and I'm really patient with people. But he didn't cover himself in glory yesterday. I expect a lot more from any manager of any team. And he didn't do that yesterday, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. So we always like to have your thoughts. We had a number of people who joined us outside the stadium, but also we've had a few thoughts that have been submitted. So these were the thoughts of Daniel from Florida.
I'm kind of disappointed today because we had so many chances, and something what I saw after the game, it gave me a Jason Tindall vibe. Like, we exactly played how we played with when we were Jason Tindall this game. And hopefully it's not like that, because I really do like Scott Parker. I think he's a really good manager. And hopefully we can do better next time. I feel like we shouldn't be making those silly mistakes. Dom Solanke, what is he doing? He should be scoring those chances he gets. We didn't play bad, but I feel like we should have done way, way, way better when we were attacking. Our defense was amazing. I'll probably give my man of the match to Jack Stacey. He was amazing. I just feel like we have our defense good. We just might need to fix that attack. Hopefully when some players come back, we'll be better. And yeah, and what's going on with Steve Cook? They said in the when they were talking about the game, that there's no sickness or anything. He was just not selected. That was pretty weird.
Interesting comments there about Jack Stacey. I think, you know, a lot of us are looking at Epham and Kelly as having better games, but, you know, each to their own. We've also got Filippo, the Cherries legend from Italy, that sent in his views too.
Hi, Sam. Hi, guys. Back in Rome, back with the kit, and back on the second look for this game against Al City. I didn't record and send anything to Sam after the 2-2 draw against Blackpool, because I was frustrated, and also after the 6-0 defeat against Norwich in the Carabao Cup, because there was just nothing to say. And about yesterday's game, I think that we really played well, and we had lots and lots of chances, especially with Dom Solanke, when he hit the ball with the head, saved by the keeper, and then the ball bounced on his head and went wide. So unlucky. But then he had to score when the keeper gave him the ball. It was one versus one. So massive chances. And Al City had a chance as well, but only one chance when they hit the crossbar in the second half. And so we had the chances to win this game, but we need to be more consistent. Absolutely, we must be more consistent, because if we drop these points are vital against the newly promoted team in every league. Because if we later in the season can win against Fulham at Craven Cottage, it doesn't change anything. So we need these points. We really need these points. Now, the international break, hope that we recover other players. Really happy to see Jefferson Lerma back on the pitch after that six games ban. It was absolutely mad from the English Football League. But anyway, next game after the international break is Barnsley at home on Saturday, September 11, on my birthday actually. And then let's hope for the best. The season is still long, but other teams are running, especially Fulham and West Brom, and also QPR and a strong start. So let's hope for the best in the next game. And up the cherries. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Love it. Up the chatties. And I love to do the accent as well. That is superb, Filippo. And yeah, pressure now is on those matches that he says, Barnsley and QPR. I think, you know, we're looking at these games as being must-win matches. And we had that under Tindall, and we ended up drawing a lot of them. So let's hope that those 1 points turn into three, Keithy. And Keith, amazing to have you on today. It's good that some people can be relied upon, whereas others can't. Tom Jordan, just woken up from my second nap of the day, he says. He tweets on saying, away days taken out of me, it seems. Already eagerly anticipating Cardiff Mind. 8 likes. So what's your message to Tom, Keefe?
Thankfully, there's professional people to bail him out. But no, exactly. He was absolutely hilarious yesterday. Really enjoyed it. He's just such a character, and obviously what we'll do is we'll get him a little blanket and some Ovaltine the night before, so he's all fresh, ready for Cardiff, and we'll look after him because he's a frail old soul. I had his foot in my face.
I was about to say that. He was so fast asleep that he started to stretch out. And yeah, he was his sole of his foot was nearly in contact with your cheek, mate. But thankfully, he woke up in time. But it was a good day, wasn't it? It was a good day. And it just reinforces the fact that football, and especially away days, it's everything. Sometimes it's everything around the game and not the game itself. And yeah. That was one of them yesterday. If we have the added bonus of having a 1-0 win in the last minute, a scuffed shot, or even if it's a 4-0 or whatever, it's even better. But enjoyed yesterday, Keefe, with you.
Definitely. And we'll have to do it again, won't we?
To hear from Keithy T there, Milford on Sea's sexiest man. Not my words, but his own. Thanks very much, Keithy. Really appreciate the feedback and the chat on that dreary 0-0. We need to really start getting some results. I think the pressure's on Scott Parker for the next couple of games now. Can we get some decent results in the bag? They are certainly much needed. Once again, this podcast comes from our YouTube channel, where we exclusively premiere them on Sunday night on our Second Look show. So if you're not a subscriber already, head to youtube.com/AFCB podcast, where you can listen to the whole thing. And look, we've had a couple of requests to try to port all our YouTube stuff directly to pod. There's probably a way to do this. I don't quite know. I haven't looked at it. If there's a way to do it seamlessly, we'd happily put every single podcast up there. However, we will find out, and look, if we can do it, we'll do it. Because why not add some more value to the back of the net proposition? So keep your eyes peeled. If that is the case, there'll be some changes with the way to how this podcast sounds, but ultimately it'll benefit you because you get more Cherries content. And given the fact on the YouTube channel we're putting out content nearly every day, it might be handy for people who are driving to work and just want a bit of AFCB goodness to listen to. We'll keep you informed on that, but in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to Back of the Net.
the AFC Bournemouth podcast.
Richie. Maybe on Walker. Pugh.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.